Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is The Bandwagon, a podcast about baseball, and this week, reading the last page first. I'm Hannah Kaiser, a writer at Yahoo Sports, joined, as always, now I get to say that because it's not our first episode anymore, by Zach Kreiser, also a baseball writer at Yahoo Sports. Hello.
Hello. Always. All two times so far.
All two times. Don't want to make any promises, but I think you'll be here next week at least.
Yes.
I'm back from spring training because the real baseball starts very soon. I'm going to spring this question on you as a surprise because I didn't tell you it was coming, but I figured we should close the book on spring training a little. It's a hefty section of the baseball calendar. So I wanted to ask you, because we're sort of, both of us right now are slogging through the transcribing from spring training and then delighting through the writing of things that we learned about in spring training. But I am curious, Zach, if you have a favorite thing that you learned or saw in spring training that's not going to make it into a story on Yahoo Sports.
Ooh, favorite thing I learned or saw that's not going to make it into a story on Yahoo Sports.
Would you like me to go first so you can think
about it? This is amazing audio. Yeah, I think you should go first.
I didn't like plan it just so I could talk about this, but I was sort of like, there's lots of fun little tidbits. You start to ask people about things and then it's not quite enough for a story. I feel like you're going to actually know where this is coming because at one point I was like, hey, how do you feel about Harry Ford? And you were like, the Mariners prospect? I think he's probably a pretty good prospect. And I was like, all right, that's not enough to write about. But delightfully, I learned that Harry Ford, the 20-year-old Mariners top prospect who also played in the WBC, he plays the saxophone and he sang Alicia Keys apparently quite well at the spring training talent show for the Mariners. And that is not going to make it into any of our stories, unfortunately. But I just thought that the world should know that apparently Harry Ford has both the vocal cords and the confidence and the presence to pull off singing Alicia Keys in front of all of his not even teammates because he's in the minors. So congrats to him.
That is confidence. Maybe what does that say about his chances of succeeding in the majors? Go.
I think it says good things. I think it says good things.
I will go with, so this is not something I learned necessarily. It's something that has been written about. I remember Andy McCullough writing about it at one point, but I was just shocked at how obsessed the Dodgers are with ping pong. I was in the Dodgers clubhouse for 3 days, and there was not a moment I was in there where there was not a very, very loud ping pong game going on, like highly competitive, yelling, high velocity ping pong serves, just obsessed with ping pong. I didn't see, like, a minute of ping pong in any other clubhouse, but I saw the Dodgers play it for hours and hours and hours on end, including like Walker Buehler, who's rehabbing and appeared to be there solely to take part in ping pong tournaments. They are just obsessed with it in a way that I don't know. Maybe more teams should play ping pong if that's the what the Dodgers are doing with their time.
That's true. That's working for them. The Mariners did have a big ping pong tournament bracket up.
Oh, yeah. I saw the bracket.
The tournament had concluded.
Yeah. I saw no ping pong played at the Mariners. Yeah.
I also did enjoy, this is like not a thing I learned, but a thing that I saw. I was there a couple times in clubhouses when guys were returning from the WBC, and I really delighted in how much their teammates delighted in seeing them. I was like, they haven't been gone that long, but they were all so excited to see each other and so like happy for their teammates who had participated, or sad for them if their team had been eliminated sort of uncharacteristically early or unexpectedly early in the case of the Dominican Republic. I like baseball friendships. It's perhaps a theme we will develop on this pod, and I enjoyed seeing them welcome their returning heroes to their various clubhouses. All right, what else should we talk about?
Okay, so I know you are a fan of F1 Drive to Survive, the Netflix show that is basically a documentary about each Formula One season. It has made Formula One, a sport that previously only my dad cared about, into a sport that a lot of young people like. He does not know the documentary exists, but he really likes the actual
Wait, really? You should
racing.
Tell him about it.
Well, I did tell him about it, and he immediately forgot. He just watches the races. He does not care about the documentary. He wants to see the cars go fast and do the mechanical things and all that stuff. He can explain downforce to you in the actual physics meaning. But F1 Drive to Survive on Netflix has made F1 very popular because it takes you inside the drama and everything. I think we're getting like snippets of what a baseball Drive to Survive would look like because, I'm sure someone had done it before this, but last year the Mariners, when they decided Julio Rodriguez was going to make the opening day roster, they did a secret camera video inside Scott Service's office while he was telling Julio that he made the team. Every other major league team has decided they have to do this now for their top prospects being promoted. The Yankees did it with Anthony Volpe. The Cardinals did it with Jordan Walker. The Brewers did it with guys who are not that famous, Bryce Terang and a reliever. And so I want to ask about these secret camera videos and whether you like them as much as Drive to Survive, because the Jordan Walker one for the Cardinals was pretty straightforward. It was just like Julio. It was manager Ollie Marmol was just excited for him, told him he was happy, end of the video. But the Yankees did a different thing. Aaron Boone tried to make it sound somber and like Volpe was getting sent down, and then he told him he was actually making the team, but he didn't have a punchline.
And Craig Counsell, the Brewers manager, did an even worse job because he seemingly set up a punchline. Like, if I had bad news, I would come right out and say it. You're making the team. And I was like, that's not the bad. That's good news. You've confused the man. He seemed very confused. He actually did not even say it that clearly. He said, we're optioning you to Chicago, which isn't even Milwaukee. It just happens to be where the Brewers are playing opening day. I was like, it's a very tricky way to tell someone very good life-changing news. As you were talking, I was thinking about the fact that actually I would like to see it with the least heralded prospects because they're probably more surprised to be getting the call to the bigs. Remember when, I didn't think about this until right now, remember when in 2019 Aaron Barrett got the call to the majors, the Nationals reliever, and there was video of his minor league coach telling him, and that was deeply emotional. Yes. Like people cried because that guy had like a really circuitous route through various injuries back to the majors, and he was very, very happy to be there. So this is just a slight suggestion, a pitch perhaps, that they do this with guys who are not expecting to ever play in the majors. That would be very cool. But okay, back to the videos that you were talking about. I went on a real emotional journey with these videos. I feel like I loved the Julio one. I was very excited when they did that. A couple other teams did it last year. I can't remember who else did it last year. And it started to seem like, oh, this is like this is going for positive PR about something. It seemed more about like demonstrating that they weren't manipulating these guys' service time to sort of like a over enthusiastic degree. I was like, yeah, congrats. You're playing your good baseball players. But I have since come back around to loving it again because of the F1 aspect, which you're talking about, which is that like I want as much sort of behind the scenes content of how they talk to each other as possible. I'm genuinely very interested in whether or not like this is how the conversation, not exactly, obviously it's not exactly how the conversation would go if it wasn't being filmed. The managers know it's being filmed, but generally, like, is this what happens? He calls him into his office, he gives him a little speech at first, perhaps he attempts some humor in the form of a misdirect, and then gives him the good news. I like knowing how their lives are going, and I also just really enjoy seeing how much it means to the players. My husband, Jake, you know him, but the people listening don't, covered minor league baseball for a really long time and used to say that, like, if it paid enough, he would only ever cover the minors because the guys getting promoted or the guys getting called up, that is the most life-changing thing that will happen to them, like, far more than, like, far more even than someone, like, winning an MVP or becoming an all-star. It's like that moment when you transition from being in the minors to being in the majors is, like, perhaps the most positive pathos you'll get in baseball. So I really enjoy them. However, the managers are terrible at this. I mean, maybe they're not. Like, maybe their baseball players are like, wow, so funny. I loved how you told me I wasn't going to get here, but then you switched it and I was. I just think, first of all, if you want to be funny, you have to be funny. And I'm not making any value judgments on Aaron Boone or Craig Counsell. Perhaps they're quite witty. Perhaps they're just not good at situational humor. But if it has to be funny, if it's going to be funny, and if it's not going to be funny, it can't be. Maybe I'm like a softy. I don't like, tell them the good news, celebrate them for being good. That, like you mentioned, Ollie Marmol, the Cardinals manager, played it completely straight in telling this to Jordan Walker. And it included like a little speech about what he had done well, how he had sort of proven himself that spring. And to me, that's one, like, more positive and nicer to your prospect. And two, just like genuinely more interesting as a viewer to sort of hear about the things that they were weighing when they made this decision, as opposed to like a fake version of telling them that they're not going to make it when in fact they did, because they did something right. And I would like to know what it was that they did right. Or again, you should just make it actually funny. Also, these misdirect videos have a unfortunate trickle-down effect, which is that, like, once you have publicized the fact that sometimes the manager makes it seem like you're not making the team when in fact you are making the team, that would seem to set up some potentially very awkward situations in which you are actually not making the team and they take a similarly somber tone at the outset of this conversation and then it just never turns.
Yeah, I think the problem, The reason these are not like the F1 series is that the managers are not used to being on camera and are not used to having their interactions filmed, and this is a one-off. So they're really trying to ham it up for this, like, two-minute video when they would actually be much more interesting if we filmed everything, if it were actually behind the scenes, if it were like Trent Crim in the new season of Ted Lasso, for instance, where it's just like an embedded reporter. Spoiler alert, not really.
What? I haven't even watched.
And the idea of seeing how a manager does this would be really interesting if you saw all of them. But when you only see the one really good one that you probably knew was coming, staged for video, it's not as interesting. There was a tweet that you quote tweeted that the Orioles had to tell Grayson Rodriguez, a similarly good prospect to Anthony Volpe and Jordan Walker, a pitcher, that he was not making the team. And I'm going to let you in on a secret here. The Orioles did not do a secret video of that interaction, and they did not tweet it. So that's the one where that would actually be the most interesting video of the options.
Right.
But we're obviously not getting that.
That actually, it's true that you didn't even mention this part, but it's like, that's also the difference between F1 is that frequently in the F1 series, you see people having unpleasant interactions. and those are really good TV, perhaps even better TV than pleasant interactions. There's a whole industry of reality TV.
I was going to say, this is why Bravo exists.
This is why Bravo exists. Yeah, they should film more stuff. There was, I should have Googled this before we started talking. There was a very short-lived show. I have referenced this so many times. There was a very short-lived show on Showtime, HBO, perhaps. I believe it was called The Franchise, and it was supposed to follow the team that had just won the World Series. They did this in 2011, so they followed the San Francisco Giants. The 2011 San Francisco Giants were a delight. That was an excellent show. I don't know why. And I watched this. I'm like the only person who's ever seen this. I watched every minute of it. In fact, I have rewatched some of the clips on YouTube. They tried to go to like spend a day with Tim Lincecum, and he had no furniture. It was very surprising. Just a bed and like a video game console. But like, that was excellent content. I don't know why they stopped doing it. I'm sure it had something to do with the access that the teams did not want to grant. But yeah, that like they should do more of that. It was really fun. That's like it was The Franchise season 2. It's apparently about the 2012 Marlins. I did not watch that one. Maybe I'll go back and watch it. This is why I'm a fan of the Giants. Like literally, I watched that in 2011. Then they went and won the World Series again in 2012. And I bought a Tim Lincecum jersey. I went to San Francisco for my birthday. I was like, I'm all in. It was literally, it was the F1 effect specific to one baseball team, like 10 years early. So yeah, they should provide more access to us reporters. This isn't a self-serving pitch
at all. No.
Okay, so speaking of good television, how do you like that for a transition? Rather than talk about the entire 162-game series and then the month-long postseason that we still have to get through, as our last pre-baseball season episode, we figured we would just cut right to the chase and talk about the World Series matchups that we want to see. This is something that you and I were talking about a few weeks ago, a few months ago. I don't particularly remember why. Do you remember why? You look like you remember why.
I do not remember why.
Oh, no. I thought you remembered why. But we were like, that would be a really interesting way to preview the season, is sort of talking about which teams we want to see at the end of it all as a way of thinking about like whose journeys are going to be particularly interesting, and also sort of what the larger, like, larger than a single season narratives are going into this season, which is a thing that I always enjoy thinking about, which is like, how are the various narratives around specific teams evolving as those teams change over, get better, get worse, all sorts of things. So yeah, so we each picked a World Series matchup. It was more difficult than I think we thought it was going to be. I think we were like, this is going to be really cool. We're going to talk about like rivalries and guys changing teams and all that kinds of stuff. And then when we sort of looked into it, first of all, there's a lot of like not on in opposite divisions.
Yeah, I legitimately proposed a World Series that is not possible. And I was like, wait a minute.
Yes.
That is,
you were,
those,
like,
are
those
two
teams
American
are in the
League
AL.
Teams.
Yes. But I know that you actually really hate my pick for a very specific reason. And so I am going to go first and you're going to attempt to bat it down. And then I will tell you why you are wrong for thinking I am wrong. So, okay. My 2023 World Series matchup that I am rooting for is the Seattle Mariners versus the San Diego Padres. Okay, the battle. When I mentioned this to Jake, again, the husband, he said, "Ooh, Battle of Peoria," which is where they both play in spring training. And I thought nobody else is going to think
no
about
one
it
will
that
care
way.
About that.
But it's true; they do share a spring training facility. So perhaps it was in my mind because I frequently saw these teams together while I was in Arizona. But in seeing them together a lot, I found myself going back to that. To Peoria a lot because both of these teams are very fun, very interesting, in a very specific position. Basically, why I picked this is that it's the like the no bad outcomes World Series matchup. Neither of these teams have ever won a World Championship. The Mariners have played for 47 seasons. This will be their 48th. The Padres have played for 55 seasons. This will be their 56th. And in all of those years, both of those teams not won a World Series title. And if they each win the pennant, which for the Mariners would also be the first time they won the pennant, then we could be like, wow, this is amazing. Like, we know ahead of time that there is a massive, nearly half century, if not more, drought about to be broken. That's very cool. They are teams that I think neutral fans will have a lot of fun rooting for, that neutral fans will have a lot of fun being introduced to. The World Series is interesting because it's like there are teams that the fans themselves really want to see in the World Series. And to that, I say, of course, every fan wants to see their team in the World Series. And I just think that like this would be a particularly fun matchup for fans who only ever pay attention to their teams and thus don't necessarily know about guys like Julio or, I don't know, like Manny Machado or Juan Soto or Tatis. Less him.
They probably know about him.
They probably know about him. Xander Bogaerts, he's fun. And it's just an interesting, I mean, the Padres are like a really easy pick because it's like, wow, they got all the really good players. They're really going for it. There's also presumably some pressure on the people at the top to deliver after spending all that money on a thing that cannot be guaranteed, which is a World Series. So we'll see how that works out. And then the Mariners, I was thinking about the fact that last year I was there when they played their series at home and were eliminated by the Astros. Oh my gosh, I don't even know how many innings. I should have made note of it. 18 innings,
18,
16 innings,
I believe.
Something like that. Yes. 18 innings. And then at the end, after they had been eliminated, their incredible, broke the drought, finally made the postseason series, season was over, and they were going home for the winter. All of the fans stayed, or at least most of the fans stayed. And for like 20 minutes, they chanted, "Let's go Mariners," at the team that had just been eliminated, and the guys stood on the field and they like reveled in it all. And I just like the Mariners really do feel like a team that is like, wow, they haven't been to the postseason in a really long time, but their fans haven't lost hope and they're really excited to see them have any level of success whatsoever. They appreciate it. Rather than get bitter, it feels like they have gotten more appreciative of the success that they get to see. And first of all, that's a fan base that I would like to reward. And second of all, that's a team that feels like, yeah, go all the way. Get the fans what they want. And then the Padres are just fun because they have lots of stars. I did not pick this matchup because spending October in San Diego and Seattle sounds very fun for me personally, as a person who does not enjoy the cold weather that often accompanies the World Series. Okay, tell me why you hate this.
So I don't hate it. I think I would very much enjoy it, but because these are two really fun teams. The Mariners have just a boatload of young guys who have not been on the big stage very much or haven't really been in the majors for very long. Luis Castillo is one of my favorite pitchers to watch. I think George Kirby is very good. It's very appealing, but I don't know if you saw, there was a study out this week about how bad news.
Studies.
Yeah, yeah. There was a study out this week that I did not read. I read the news reports about the study that, bad news has been a much bigger incentive for readers to read and a much bigger incentive for news companies to produce bad news because it actually does much better than the good news everyone says they want. And I think World Series matchups are the same. People, neutral fans, like Seattle and San Diego fans would obviously watch this, but that's true of any matchup you put together except for maybe like the Rays. So that is going to be there. What you need to draw in the whole country to a World Series matchup is a villain. You need the Astros, you need the Dodgers, you need the Yankees, you need someone who everyone that isn't a fan of that team hates or doesn't want to see win. You need a contrast in styles. When the Mariners play the Padres, it's like two teddy bears in a fight. Like no one wants either one to lose. It's everyone is waiting for like either team to win, and it kind of saps some of the drama. You want, ideally, my World Series matchups would be the Padres win it this year and the Mariners win it next year, and each one of them slays a huge dragon that they get to feel great about beating. You know, the Mariners can take down the Braves, the Padres can beat the Yankees in a 1998 rematch. That all seems great, but because this is a draft and we didn't want to both take the Padres, I did not do, also our producer is a Padres fan, so we could really be accused of bias, but I did not want to take the Padres too, so I came up with a different matchup that kind of accentuates the villainy that I think really draws people into the World Series, and that is a Subway Series, the Mets and the Yankees. Now, these might both be villains to a lot of people, I understand. I get it that Steve Cohen, the Mets owner, is spending a world record level of money on this year's Mets. And to some people, that makes him a villain. To other people, it's the alleged workplace abuses at his hedge fund. But either way, there are things that make people dislike the Mets. And then there are the Yankees, who have been baseball's disliked villain for pretty much 80 years, 100 years, about 100 years. So that adds an element of conflict and everything to the mix. The Yankees are actually, I think, the team under the most pressure to win the World Series right now, since the Dodgers got theirs, even if you don't think it counts as much because it was 2020. The Yankees now haven't won since 2009. Do you agree that they are the team under like the most fan base pressure to get a ring?
I do, although I dislike that narrative because perhaps I will write about that. That I think that it is like the Yankees fans feeling aggrieved and applying pressure to their team is such a form of like entitlement. Like, why do we need to care that you guys haven't seen a World Series in over a decade? Oh my gosh. Okay, continue.
So the Yankees have that, and then the Mets have the new kid in school who just, you know, struck oil in his backyard type feel, where it's like, oh, we don't know what to do with our hands. We have Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer at the same time, and we are just probably going to be really good indefinitely by virtue of pure largesse. Maybe they won't be because they're the Mets, but they have that. It's very much like the Mariners and Padres, where they're nouveau riche and trying to get to the World Series and win one. They have been there much more recently. They went in 2015, still under Wilpon ownership, but didn't win it. So I think the clash there, when you combine it with the dynamics of New York, where Yankees fans would be especially on edge if they made it all the way there and then lost to the Mets, that's pretty much, I think that might be worse than the Yankees like missing the playoffs, is getting all the way to the World Series and then getting like stomped by the Mets. I think that would be the most schadenfreude you can get in a World Series. So I am in it for the narrative stress that it puts on everyone. And I think neutral fans would tune in not to see, you know, a glorious championship for the very rich New York Mets or the literal Yankees, but to see whoever lost melt down. And unfortunately, unfortunately or fortunately, I think that is what draws eyes that don't have a rooting interest to the World Series.
I have many things that I would like to respond to. First of all, I think we both were like, we can't just pick the Subway Series for a really long time. And then we were like, it's actually a pretty good Subway Series. It's a pretty good year. It's a pretty good year for a Subway Series. Mm-hmm. I think you are right that the content potential would be quite fun. Last year, when the Mets were just like very good because Steve Cohen had spent all this money and they signed all these stars and the Yankees were still the Yankees, they played each other. They had two Subway Series, a home and home. And I wrote about fans who were family members of other of the opposite fans. So families divided between Mets and Yankees fandom. Mm-hmm. And that was such a fun story to report out, because you're right. Like, we will call those people again if they have to say Subway Series, World Series, because everything they said was gold. You're right about the villainy. I completely understand what you are saying. And I actually think at the outset of this exercise, sort of thinking about potential World Series matchups, the first question that we had to move past was like, do you want to see the Astros again? Because on the one hand, no, they've been in the postseason a lot, and that would be like kind of a boring pick. On the other hand, not only are they good villains for the obvious reason, they're good villains just for having been there a lot. In some ways, I think that like the Astros existing as this like perpetual final boss, this like, yeah, just like
that's exactly what they are. Yeah,
that's exactly
the
what
last
they are.
Level of the video game.
There's nothing else. I don't know why I said or. Yeah. It's exactly what they are. That has been really fun for the last couple of years. And if we get that again, it will not be unfun. Like that is but at some point it does have to end. So I think that like the villainy, the schadenfreude, the can they keep this up, is a very interesting storyline. I would rather see it with the Astros than anybody else. Like, the Dodgers don't inspire that in me. The Yankees kind of do, although I think the Yankees present like a weird, right. The Yankees present a weird situation where if they make the World Series, they're everyone who isn't a fan of the Yankees will feel like, oh, the Yankees. And everyone who is a fan of the Yankees will be like, hey, we're never here, which is not true. And I don't look forward to that in particular. Also, it is very cold in New York in late October, and I will be very cold at both of those stadiums, which have open air press boxes. And it's very hard to type when your fingers are frozen.
That's true. But
Did you think about that? We'll
deal with it if that means Subway Series, and Yahoo will be very thrilled by the lack of plane tickets necessary.
I think that these would both. Are there other teams or other smaller, like, actually not other teams, are there other matchups that a pairing of those two teams is compelling to you for one particular reason, but that's not enough to be a World Series matchup pick?
I mean, I think whenever we talk about scripting out a baseball season like this, the natural next thing to say is, like, obviously it's not going to happen how we want it to, but right. The World Baseball Classic just did the thing that everyone wanted it to do before it started and had Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout match up with the tournament on the line. So yeah, the Angels making it against literally anyone would be great. Right. If the Angels somehow played like a little league team in the World Series, I think everyone would watch, but, the Angels against the Mets, the Angels against the Dodgers, anything in that realm would be fun. I think if you had it as like a Shohei Ohtani play-in series where winner gets Ohtani, basically, that would be pretty fun. Padres Angels could work for that too, probably. I don't know how the math works on their payroll there, but whatever. The one that I had been a fan of prior to this year, I just kind of want to see the matchup for the era, like to figure out the era's best team. I think for a long time that was just Dodgers Astros again. Let's see it without the cheating this time. But the Dodgers are a little bit not diminished, but they're a little diminished. They let some of their stars go. They didn't replace them. They're kind of reloading. We don't know exactly what those guys are yet. But you could also make a case for the Astros and Braves playing again. You could make a case for Braves, Yankees, bring back, maybe that would make John Smoltz happy for 10 minutes. Probably not, but maybe.
Wow, that's what we need to be wishing for.
So all of those are, I am almost boring in that I actually want to see the best teams play in the World Series. I am really interested in seeing the best teams square off and decide who the winner is, even though it takes away some of the chaos potential.
I think you have, yes, that is completely understandable. It is hard when you are really close to the sport to not think that, like to not feel like, oh, well, I want to, like, these teams are so good and they so rarely play, so put them on a stage together. That'd be fun. Like, I'll attend the Astros playing the Mets. I don't know if they do, but if the Astros play the Mets this year, I'll go to that series. That sounds like a really good series.
Everyone plays everyone now, remember? Balance.
That's
schedule.
True. You're right. If they play in New York, I'll go. If they play in Houston, I still might go. But right, that like the best teams facing off just is good baseball, and so that is compelling. But you're right, it often requires a recent rematch, and then it's like, okay, yeah, like the Astros versus Braves was a very good World Series. Do we want to see it again? You could really go either way with that, which is like, yes, it was a great World Series, run it back, same with Astros Dodgers. I actually do think that the Astros Mets would be really good, the Verlander Bowl, the Baseball Zone Orange Bowl. Are there other good? There aren't really good. We're not in a moment where there's like a really good, like, oh, I guess it's like when the Dodgers play the Braves in the CS, then that will be the good Freddie Freeman goes home. Like, there isn't really a good, like, major star now plays for a new team. How will it be when he faces his old team?
Yeah, I don't think
potential.
There's a lot there. I do think there's the fight for the soul of baseball where the two most extreme teams play, which is the Mets and the Rays. The team that spends nothing and is good all the time versus the team that spends everything and is sometimes good, sort of. That would be an interesting matchup, although you run sort of into the same thing where I don't think a lot of people actually hate the Mets, even though they spend a lot. And I don't think anyone really hates the Rays. I'm sort of annoyed by the Rays. I will like fess up to that sometimes. But I think that contrast of styles would be interesting. But do I want to pick it? No, I do not.
All right. Well, so it'll be either Padres Mariners or a Subway Series that we would be happy with. It's not, like you said, it's never going to be the thing that we want it to be. Although often, I mean, last year's World Series was great. Honestly, no one saw the Phillies coming. Everybody saw the Astros coming. And that was a lovely matchup. I enjoyed it tremendously. I would be happy with that again. Really, any World Series matchup is like a fun World Series matchups, because by the time they make the World Series, all of these players have had very interesting storylines. Like that's really at the heart of, like, it's fun to try to pick these team-wide narratives, but I wouldn't have told you that I'd be super excited to see Jeremy Peña on the world's biggest stage ahead of last season, and then it turns out I was. And I wouldn't have told you that the Phillies would have turned out to be like the fun, plucky upstarts who changed their entire season by getting a new manager, and that was also very fun. So yeah, whatever happens, we will enjoy it. We will write about it. This is a surprisingly positive note to end on, so we're going to take a quick break and come back with a bandwagon for something old.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, last week we both bandwagoned something new in honor of the fact that there were going to be new rules. But we still the same old baseball that we know and love. I don't actually know if that was our reasoning for doing it this way, but we're going to bandwagon something old this week. We were free to interpret it however we wanted. Zach, what are you bandwagoning?
I'm bandwagoning Hall of Fame pitchers who are still adding to their legacy. This is a fancy way of saying I'm bandwagoning old pitchers. And that is right now mainly Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, we just talked about, they're on the Mets, Clayton Kershaw on the Dodgers, and he's kind of stopped adding to the legacy from a statistical standpoint, but I would include Zach Greinke in this. Mm-hmm. He had been adding to his legacy up until about last year as a very, very good pitcher into his late 30s, and now he's good for, you know, weird oral histories and funny pitchcom exploits. And did you see the spring training game where he intentionally got people on base because he hadn't had enough time to practice his pickoff moves? And then he picked off 10 times in 3 innings.
Oh, just my gosh. To practice. That's so fun.
And after the game, he was like, yeah, I was annoyed that not enough people were getting on base, so I walked a bunch of guys.
All right. Well, maybe he is going to add to his legacy if no one's getting on base against him.
So Zach Greinke, a delight. But, you know, I think the element of watching Justin Verlander, watching Max Scherzer, watching Clayton Kershaw now, if they retired yesterday, they're going in the Hall of Fame in 5 years. And I don't care particularly about the Hall of Fame distinction. I think it's just a nice marker for, oh, these guys are already legends. They are going to go down in the sports history as the best pitchers of the generation, in the same way that we had Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, Roger Clemens at the same time. We have these guys. And they are still really, really good. Justin Verlander won the Cy Young last year, if that is news to anyone. Max Scherzer has been one of the most sought after pitchers the past few years, even though he's over 35 and headed toward 40. I think just seeing the way that age no longer dings that level of greatness, whether that's through modern training techniques, the fact that these guys were just so far ahead of the pack that even if they come back, they're still the best. That is just a fascinating element of it. And Kershaw is a little different in that he had stratospheric greatness for 8 to 10 years, and now he's sort of in the he's really great when his back doesn't hurt phase of his career, which I think as people in our 30s we can relate to. And so whenever he has those moments of transcendence again, last year, very early in the season, he got pulled from the no-hitter. That type of stuff just comes through more for these guys. It adds stakes. It adds intrigue to everything they do in a way that you don't get even with guys who are really, really great. Aaron Nola, like, yeah, everyone's really happy when Aaron Nola has a great game, but it's not put this on a plaque right now level interest. And so I think watching the legends who are already legends just has that to it, where that is what I tune in for a lot.
Yeah, I really like this pick. I too sort of think of Verlander and Scherzer in the same bucket, and then Kershaw in a slightly different bucket. With Kershaw, it feels a little bit more like when he is great, you're like, wow, vintage Kershaw. Getting to it feels like you are watching to see if you're going to get another taste of that. And then you get to be like, nice. Okay. One more really good start like that we got to watch from Clayton Kershaw. With Verlander and Scherzer, I truly think, yeah, that we don't, I hate to use this framing, but like, we don't talk about enough about it. We really don't. Like, that the two, like, it does not stand to reason that the oldest pitchers would be the best. In fact, frequently it is not that at all. And yet we are living in an era in which two of the greatest pitchers are very old, and they're on almost exactly sort of like parallel age tracks. Like, they are old at the same time and great at the same time. And with them, it really feels like you are watching to see how long they can fend off time. Like, they are doing an incredible thing that it transcends sports in a way, which is like, they are doing something that is virtually impossible if you extrapolate out far enough, which is like beating time and age. That doesn't happen a lot. In fact, to no one, we all die eventually. But like, that they are doing on a small scale, that they are through, and they are both have the personality for this. In a way, it seems like through sheer grit, they are sort of like holding back the tide of time. And every time we watch them pitch, it feels a little bit like that. Like, are you going to see the cracks this time, or are they sort of continuing to, it feels very almost visual and metaphorical in this way. Like, are you going to see them weaken a little bit, or, and when they do weaken a little bit, which we've seen with each of them, it feels like, okay, well, this is, you know, this is, we're turning a corner. We've gone over the pinnacle. Now we are definitely into some sort of downslide. And then when they come back and they're great again, I mean, perhaps no more emphatically than Verlander winning the Cy Young last year after Tommy John surgery, it feels like, oh my gosh, no, we're not. They're back. They're back at it. They're going to fend it off for a little bit longer. I really do enjoy that plot, I guess, in baseball these days. More than anything else.
Yeah, it's very much, if you like Tom Brady, I really got to show you these guys who have yes. all of the age defiance without the weird huckster nutritional habits or the divorce drama. So, you know, just come over to baseball and watch these guys instead of worrying about Tom Brady's retirement or lack thereof.
It's going to be genuinely very fun to watch them be in the same rotation. And now, because they are in the same rotation, and particularly because that rotation is the Mets rotation, it feels like there's an added element to that can they fend off timeness, which is that, like, this team that really wants, I mean, they all want to win the World Series, but this team that really wants to win a World Series this year, if not last year, has bought into their ability to do that and doubled down on their ability to do that quite literally by signing both of them. And now we get to see if that was like the correct gamble. Like, did they have one more year in them?
Yeah. And on their side, it's like a real upping the ante. Can you stay healthy at 40? Now, can you stay healthy at 40 while pitching for the Mets? Ooh, you know, it's, if you can do that, it's really a superpower.
They probably each have their own doctors, right? I hope so. Yeah, I got nothing bad to say about that pick. I really enjoy it. That feels like a genuine pick in that, like, everyone is bandwagoning these people. Like, as far as I'm concerned, unless your team is facing the Mets, you should be rooting for them to stay healthy. First of all, because it's not nice to root for people to not be healthy. And second of all, because you're watching greatness. It really is true that, like, we baseball lends itself to recognizing that in real time. I guess all sports kind of do, but because you can be really, you can be at the top of your game when you're old, I guess. It's like, it doesn't require perhaps quite the same amount of like running stamina, jumping stamina as other sports. You get to really, and because people take center stage. Every time Albert Pujols stepped to the plate last year, you'd be like, all right, well, let's see. Albert Pujols. This is the Albert Pujols moment. And with pitchers in particular, every time they take the mound, you're like, this is a chance to watch a future Hall of Famer. You can say that emphatically, truly, genuinely. You can buy tickets. And then if your friend who doesn't know anything about baseball is going with you, you can be like, what are we going to see? You're like, a future Hall of Famer tonight on the mound. I look forward to that. In keeping with the theme of bandwagoning old pitchers, I was like, wow, what a great idea. We should bandwagon some old pitchers. And then I took it to a place that you did not expect. We will be bandwagoning, or I will be bandwagoning Johnny Cueto. He's old, so that
he is.
That takes care of that.
He should be in the Hall of Fame for different reasons.
He's 37. He is 10 years older than the next oldest pitcher on the Marlins rotation, Sandy Alcantara, by the way, he's in the Marlins rotation. You didn't know that. Exactly. You definitely did not know that about Johnny Cueto. I mean, you knew that, but probably a lot of people listening, they didn't know that. Do you know how I know they didn't know that? Because when I Googled Johnny Cueto to prepare for this segment, the little like suggestions, the first question was people ask, it's like people sometimes ask, what happened to Johnny Cueto? And to that I say, he's still pitching. And in fact, he's coming off a pretty good year. So last year, again, if you didn't know, which you might not have, it's okay. He pitched for the Chicago White Sox on April 4th. So after the season started, Johnny Cueto signed a minor league contract with the White Sox. They called him up. Very exciting. I wish they had made a video of him being told that he was getting called up on May 16th. And then he went on to have a really good year. Not just like a cute year, like a good year. Among all AL starting pitchers who threw at least 150 innings. He was tied for 13th. That's not amazing, but with a 3.35 ERA, he was 7th in fewest walk percentage, lowest walk percentage.
It's pretty good for a guy who wasn't signed before the season started.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because at some point last year, for whatever reason, I had cause to look up, I guess looking into how deep into games various pitchers go. And I was shocked to see that at the time, Johnny Cueto was leading the AL in innings per game starts. By the end of the year, he sunk to 5th among all MLB. I believe he's like 3rd in the AL. 5th out of all MLB pitchers in innings per start last year. You put Johnny Cueto in there, you get your bullpen a break. 18th, again, not super high, but pretty high for a guy who didn't have a job at the start of the year, in quality starts. 6th in quality start percentage. So of all of his starts that he made, he was 6th highest in those that were, what is that, like at least 6 innings and fewer than 3 runs. He was tied for 5th in complete games, but that's because he threw a single complete game and only Sandy Alcantara threw more than 3. I was reading this and I was like, wow, the Marlins bullpen is going to get a real break this year, at least 2 out of 5 days. This is delightful. And Johnny Cueto, inherently delightful because of his pitching motion, which, bring it into 2023, I believe is allowed. So, okay, there's certain motions, Christian Javier, rock the baby motion.
Oh, no, Luis Garcia's
rock the baby. Framber Valdez sometimes has a weird motion as well. That some of these have become illegal under the new rules because you have to have a more definitive start to your motion with the pitch clock. However, if you raise your front leg, begin your motion, and then
do whatever you want,
just wobble around like a weeble that won't fall down, you can do whatever you want up there. And that will benefit Nestor Cortez, famously on the Yankees, and also Johnny Cueto, a 37-year-old pitcher on the Miami Marlins that you did not know was pitching still in Major League Baseball, if you are the person who typed into Google, what happened to Johnny Cueto? So we should all root for him to, one, do well. Two, I guess, mentor this Marlins rotation, which other than Johnny Cueto, people are very excited about because they have lots of young and exciting pitchers who will probably still be on the team when they are good. And Johnny Cueto probably won't be on the team when they are good. But perhaps they will have learned something about life or pitching or equestrian, because he's a big horseback rider, from Johnny Cueto that will benefit them, not the equestrian part, when they are good. And to that I say, pay attention to Johnny Cueto this year before the Marlins are good and give him the appreciation he deserves.
I need Johnny Cueto to teach Yuri Perez, who is a top Marlins prospect. He might make the majors later in the season. He is 6'8", I believe, maybe 6'9" now. He's still growing. He's like a right-handed Chris Sale / Slender Man. He disappears when he turns sideways. Very, very thin. I need Johnny Cueto to teach him to do the wobble delivery. I think people would freak out if this guy did the wobble delivery. And then,
he would look like those inflatable guys outside car dealers if he did the wobble.
Yeah.
If it was like a tall, skinny guy wobbling.
If a tall, skinny guy wobbled and then threw 100 at you, you would just run away, right? I mean, you would not know what to do. You just leave the box and give up.
I just think Johnny Cueto was a very fun pitcher, and I delighted in the fact that he had a surprisingly good year last year. If you're a Marlins fan, you should definitely bandwagon Johnny Cueto, because there is not a lot else happening there. That's not true. Jazz Chisholm is fun. But yeah, that is my my bandwagon pick. So this year, to recap our two preseason bandwagons, we will be bandwagoning Johnny Cueto, Hall of Fame pitchers, I forget, or something news. I was going to finish that. You take over. What were something news?
My something new was panic. The third throw over to a base.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what your something new was.
My something new was the AL West race.
Yes.
That was, you know what? Now that I've been reminded of it, that's a good pick. I'm mm-hmm. excited to watch the AL West race and all of the other races that will be happening, because the real regular Major League Baseball season starts this Thursday. And if you have enjoyed this content, you will definitely enjoy what we can do when there are actual baseball games happening for us to talk about. So please tune in every Tuesday. You don't have to tune in on Tuesday. You can listen whenever, but that's when these episodes will come out. You should follow Zach on Twitter at Z Kreiser. What are you writing about this week?
Opening day, it's come up. I published a story about the change in the face of MLB coaching.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys who were never players. That is out on Yahoo Sports. We are working together on a story about a super top secret, not really, strategy that is very simple, but all the teams are adopting it. About
don't say what it is, because I think we're probably gonna write, we'll probably talk about that next week on this podcast. Okay, so thanks Zach for being here. Thank you Oso. We forgot to thank them last week. They're a band, but it's a him who gave us, who very generously allowed us to use a song as our intro. We went with that because we wanted something that we genuinely enjoy. This is a podcast about things that we enjoy, baseball, but also specifically bandwagoning, things that we enjoy. And we enjoy Oso Oso. You in particular enjoy Oso Oso. And
I'm a big fan, yes.
I went to a show with them, him again, with you. I never go to shows, so that was a real testament to our friendship. And you saw them again. Him.
Yeah, he was opening. Him. He and him. His band.
He makes
the albums and then the band tours with him. And so they played an opening show at the Music Hall of Williamsburg this weekend, and it was cheap to get in, so I went over and saw their set. It was good.
And you did not, but I said that you should have, like, waved and been like, it's me, the guy who does the podcast that you so generously allow to use a song as the intro. So again, thank you to Oso Oso. Thank you to Zach. If you've made it this far, you should definitely subscribe, leave us a review, tell a friend. And when we come back next week, we will talk about actual regular season Major League Baseball. See you there.